This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Welcome to today's ILTA podcast entitled The Modern Ethical Minefield, Leveraging Technology to Manage Conflicts at the International Law Firm. I'm your moderator today, Tracy Pardo, IS Process Improvement Analyst, Cooley LLP. I'm thrilled to be joined by our speaker, Mark Egan, Senior Manager of Global New Business Intake and Information Management, Shearman and Sterling LLP. Welcome, Mark.
Hi, Tracy.
First question, what are the main conflict concerns firms face when onboarding lateral attorneys, particularly partners who might be bringing work with them?
Good question, Tracy. So first of all, thanks for having me. Getting right into your question, the concerns really are grounded in the ABA model rule of professional conduct, which states apply their own versions of these, but they're similar across most jurisdictions. So first, we're talking about clients left behind by that lateral at their old firm. So these are former clients. Under the rules, the attorney owes them a few duties. First, we have the 1.6 duty of confidentiality. So any confidential information that attorneys acquired while representing them, that duty doesn't go away now that they're a former client. They have to, you know, maintain their confidences. And then the big one is 1.9, which codifies duties owed to former clients. The standard here is an attorney at their new firm cannot not act for a client at their new firm in a matter materially adverse to that former client if the matter is the same or substantially related to the matter that they acted for that former client in previously. So those are briefly what the new firm needs to look at in terms of duties owed to former clients. And, you know, the backbreaker here is rule 1.10, which basically says that if any of those duties are violated by that incoming lateral, that conflict is imputed to every attorney at the new firm. Now, I need to mention, of course, you know, if 1.9 is violated, that can be cured via, you know, written waivers from the impacted former client. And in most jurisdictions, 1.10 imputation can be cured via the imputation of timely screening procedures and prompt notice of these procedures to the former client. I say in most jurisdictions because New York actually does not recognize, you know, the efficacy of ethical walls to cure these types of conflicts. That said, you always want to be careful. Waivers are not always easy to get, and screens can be challenged. And, you know, I think we'll touch upon that a bit more. Apart from, you know, those duties out to former clients, when dealing with laterals, you always need to watch out, you know, particularly partners, the work that they're porting over needs to go through, you know, our standard 1.7 concurrent client conflicts and analysis. And what that is, you know, briefly is that, you know, a lawyer cannot represent one client in a matter directly adverse to another client, whether, you know, that client be in a matter that's related or unrelated, it doesn't matter for 1.7 purposes. So you have to make sure the work that's actually being brought over by that lateral is not going to, you know, create 1.7 conflict issues. And lastly, you know, apart from the rules, there are business concerns. So you want to make sure that the work being brought over by any lateral is in line with the firm's, you know, business goals and its strategic, you know, needs, because, you know, that might not always be the case. You know, not all work is good work for a firm. So when looking at, you know, what work a lateral might be bringing over, that is definitely a consideration along with the rules. And the end outcome of, you know, not considering these factors is very bad. First, you know, we're talking about disqualification in a litigation setting. You can get disqualified from a matter, and that can lead to malpractice suits, which are never good. And then apart from, you know, that outcome, you could get fired, and no firm wants to get fired by a client. Not a good thing. So best thing a firm can do is really, you know, monitor the work coming in from its laterals.
It looks like there's a lot of factors to take into account when you're looking to hire a lateral, it seems.
Definitely, definitely.
Great. Great answer to that question. Next question. Are there any concerns unique to large international firms, or at least more pronounced at them, and why?
So what I just talked about, I guess there's two answers. The short answer is no, they're not unique to large international firms. These rules apply to every lawyer, you know, from the solo practitioner to, you know, the partner at any Am Law, you know, top 10 firm. So no, specifically, they are not unique. They are certainly more pronounced at these large firms. And that's for a few reasons. the very nature of the rules themselves create problems. It's almost like they're designed to create problems for big firms, specifically ones with offices in various, you know, countries. These firms naturally have more lawyers coming and going. So, I mean, of course, the conflicts rules would create, could create more issues for them. They have more clients and matters to keep track of. They're more likely to be growth oriented. They're bringing in more laterals. And then, you know, going back to that specific problem of imputation, you know, if you're at a small firm, it kind of makes sense that, you know, any information that you have, any conflict that you have, can be applied to, you know, the other four attorneys at your firm. It makes sense. When we're talking about a large firm with thousands of attorneys in different offices, there really can be no reasonable expectation that, you know, a project development and finance partner sitting in Abu Dhabi is going to know exactly what work a tax partner sitting in Austin is doing at a given time, or, you know, even worse, what they might have done at their prior firm. And yet, the rules kind of make that a requirement, which is, you know, I'll let you be the judge of whether that's good or not. But I have my own thoughts on that. Now, part of that is that's the cost of doing business at a large firm. There are obviously, you know, many benefits of doing business at a large firm, but it's a very real cost. And it's something that, you know, these firms have to deal with and be cognizant of. I think the real question here, and I, what I touched on it before, is, you know, should the rules do more to take into account the modern reality of the large international law firm? You know, these are relatively new things. I mean, I know, you know, 20, 30 years ago, you know, this wasn't, you know, as prevalent. But, you know, I think that's a question for another podcast. I would say we might not have time to discuss that today.
Right. I think we do see it more nowadays, the people leaving and going to other firms, whereas, like you said, 20, 30 years ago, people stayed at firms for their entire career.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this anecdotally, you know, coming up as a lawyer, I was always told, you know, oh, back in the day, you know, you would never, you know, loyalty, and you would never, you know, hop firms, and that's just not the case anymore. I think we can all see that.
Right, right, great. Next question: has there been an increased scrutiny in this area? And if so, by whom, and what might be driving this?
So again, I guess I'll take the wishy-washy approach here. Not a clear answer. The rules are the rules. And those rules, for the most part, have been in place for some time now. You know, there has been some changes in statewide adoption. You know, for example, California only adopted, you know, their version of the ABA model rules, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. But even before that, the rules have been similar. So I don't want to say for sure there has been increased scrutiny. There have been some recent rulings that would suggest possibly yes. Last year, you know, in particular, you know, one of the largest firms, Denton's, was hit with a very large malpractice verdict against them in state court in Ohio, following, you know, after they had been disqualified in a patent matter. And the kind of the jarring thing about this one is Denton's and several other large international firms, you know, apply the Swiss variance model, which that basically means that they view all of their offices internationally are kind of set up independently from one another. And that's for a couple, you know, that's for tax purposes, but it's also for conflicts purposes. Now, the court here basically said, no, you're all one firm and we're going to disqualify, you know, your U.S. office for prior work done by your Canadian office. So that kind of made waves. You know, if large firms can't apply this model, then yes, they are going to be under a lot, you know, increased scrutiny. And same thing, last week, a federal judge in California disqualified a plaintiff's counsel in an antitrust case against a very large social media company due to the fact that they hired that plaintiff's firm hired an associate that had previously worked on an antitrust matter for that company. Now this was a fourth year associate, not a partner. At his new firm, he was not working on this matter, you know, but it didn't matter to that judge. They got disqualified. So, you know, you could look at some cases and say, yes, there is increased scrutiny, but I wouldn't go so far as to say, you know, it's definite at this point. What it really comes down to is, I think it's best interest for a firm not to try to find out how a judge is going to rule on this stuff. And just follow the rules, I would say.
Right. Very good. Yeah, I guess that's we all have to start just being more careful.
Yes.
Next question. What do you think is behind the trend towards centralization of the conflicts process among the large firms?
So just briefly, I think I have to first just say what centralization is in the conflicts process. To me, centralization means all conflicts are handled, you know, for the entire firm by a central group of individuals, be it attorneys, non-attorneys. You know, at Sherman, we have attorneys, and they resolve conflicts for the entire firm. This would be opposed to decentralized model where conflicts are resolved by, you know, either the partner who's requesting the check for that matter or someone associated with them. And, you know, there's no kind of unifying, you know, conflicts force, for lack of a better term. I do think there's definitely a trend towards centralization, and it's done out of necessity. You know, first, you know, we've talked about the rules, how complex they are and how they're becoming more complex as firms grow. It's also attorney driven, simply not the best use of a partner or an associate's time to be clearing conflicts. This is not billable work. They can provide, you know, value to the firm elsewhere, I would say. And lastly, a lot of this is client driven. I don't think it's a secret that clients' outside counsel guidelines are becoming more and more complex. Within these guidelines, their conflicts requirements are becoming more and more restrictive and complex. You know, they're creating rules that aren't even, you know, in the rules, but it's what they want and it's what they see as important. And that is important. The clients want to see that their firms have policies and processes in place, demonstrate an understanding of the duties that are owed to them as a client. So, you know, I think all of these together are really driving this, you know, trend towards centralization. And I think it's a good thing, personally.
I have to agree with you. I think having one process to go through is a better way. And our last question, do you see an increasing reliance on new technology as going hand in hand with this move towards centralization? And if so, is it necessary?
That's a good one to finish off on. It absolutely is a necessity. And I mean, look, the fact that we're having this discussion hosted by the International Legal Technology Association kind of says it all. A good centralized conflicts model creates a situation where that centralized body acts as, you know, the all-seeing eye of a firm. And this is necessary because, again, based on imputation, every single lawyer at a firm knows what every other lawyer at a firm knows, you know, generally based on imputation. So in order to monitor that, in order to police that, you need to have somebody that knows, that actually does know what every other lawyer at the firm knows. And that's just impossible to do without technology. You know, I personally could not do, you know, it's my job to do that. And I'm telling you, there's no way I could do that without, you know, significant technological assist. You know, we use technology for our new matter intake. We use technology for our conflicts database. We use technology for, you know, our matter security, you know, ethical walls and screens. That's all done, you know, via significant technology. And I cannot imagine a situation, you know, handling this without that. So, I mean, I guess I'll wrap up by saying, while we are, you know, we as, you know, myself as a conflicts professional and all lawyers really, because we're all left bound by these rules today, are, you know, required to, you know, look out for so many more things than we ordinarily would, both in terms of, you know, lateral conflicts, you know, partners coming to firms, partners leaving firms, everything. Because of technology, we do have so many more weapons that we can utilize to stay on the right side of those rules than, you know, certainly lawyers did 10 to 20 years ago. And I do wonder if maybe that kind of explains, you know, the willingness for firms, or at least part of it, for firms to be so active in the lateral market and really, you know, grow at the pace that they're currently looking to grow in.
Yeah, it sounds like that's probably, I think, what's driving some of the growth is the ability to follow the rules.
Yeah. I think it's the technology had to come first before the growth could come and before the centralization could come. I don't think it's the other way around. I don't think it's that, you know, firms move to centralized, you know, conflicts process to assess these lateral conflicts and new matter conflicts, and then, you know, the technology adapted. I don't think that was the case.
Yes, I think I have to agree. Well, thank you very much. Your answers were awesome. And I think I learned a lot on
great.
Listening to this. So in conclusion, thank you to the audience for tuning in to today's podcast. And again, I want to convey my thank you to Mark for doing this. And everyone have a wonderful day.
Thanks a lot, Tracy. A lot of fun.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.